Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for our very first call of the year, AgriBility, Agriculture Business, and Independent Living. If you need to access CART for today's call, please go to the April website at www.APRIL-RURAL.org and follow the link on our homepage. If you're having any trouble accessing it, please email me at mary.olson, O-L-S-O-N, at mso.umt.edu. And I can help you to access that. Today's call will be recorded, and the audio recording and transcript will be available online at our website under the IL Conversations tab following the call. We also will have information about our speakers and any material that they will be referencing throughout the call. And those should also be available right now on our homepage if you'd like to look at them while folks are speaking. Just a little bit about how to participate in today's call. During today's conversation, everybody is on mute. That's just to try to keep some background noise down. But if you would like to add to our topic from your experience or ask any questions, you can press star 2 to raise your hand during the presentation. And then I will make your line live. When your line goes live, you will hear somebody say, "Your line is now unmuted." And that's your go-ahead cue to ask your question or make your comment. Please remember to lower your hand again with star 2 when you're finished. Also, we would love it if you evaluate our conversation on our website following the call, again, under that IL Conversations tab. Your feedback is important to us, and it can only make us stronger as an organization. This IL Conversation is presented by the ILNet, which is operated by the Independent Living Research Utilization Program in partnership with APRIL, NICL, and Utah State. Support for this IL Conversation is provided by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Community Living. No official endorsements of the department should be inferred. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce you all to your presenters. So today we have with us Paul Jones from the National AgriBility Project. Cindy, I apologize, Cindy, you're going to have to correct me. Cindy Chastain, the veteran, Veterans Outreach Coordinator, and Steve Etheridge, and he's going to be talking to us a little bit about vocational rehabilitation, and Tom Yankman. And so when you guys speak, if you don't mind just telling us, you know, an interesting fact about yourself. I usually read some biographies, but I thought since there's so many of us, it might be more fun to let you guys kind of speak a little about yourself. So, without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and let you guys take it away.
Mary, was Sierra going to be talking at all first?
I am right here. Hi, I'm Sierra Royster. I actually work with Mary at the Associations of Programs for Rural Independent Living, APRIL. I'm the Youth Programs Coordinator. And one of the other things that I'm responsible for is AgriBility. So, before we got into the nitty-gritty of AgriBility, I wanted to kind of give everybody just a little information of how APRIL and AgriBility really got to where we're at today. So for the past 8 years, the National AgriBility Project and APRIL have collaborated on an informal basis. Billy Altum, our executive director, has been a member of the National AgriBility Advisory Committee. And through that time together, we just really have a natural connection of what both of our organizations do. We both serve rural America, and we both serve individuals with disabilities. So we understand some of the challenges and some of the strengths that are out there for people living in rural remote settings, farmers, and so on. So within that, we have actually formalized a partnership now, and we are hoping that through this partnership with APRIL and AgriBility, we're really able to get some new information resources out there. So that's one of the things that you're going to be seeing a lot of. From April, you might have already been seeing some of our emails. Do our listserv go out to our membership? If you're, joined our Facebook page or liked it, and then our Twitter account, if you follow us there, we've been posting some stuff that is agribility newsletters from different projects from across the country, and also just rural information that affects rural America and consumers that may be living in the rural areas. So that has been going out already, and you will continue to see that. One of the things you might have seen go out is the Agribilities National Workshop that will be coming up in March. We've sent that out. And then if you were able to attend our conference this past year, you saw a presentation from Paul, who's getting ready to speak, and then Billy and myself, who kind of talked a little bit about what agribility is. With our work together, we're hoping to really just be able to provide a natural connection for centers and for the state agribility projects. We know that lots of centers are serving farmers and people that are working in agriculture, and they also are serving the community that serves individuals, maybe businesses that serve consumers with disabilities. And so we want to be a bridge for both those organizations to really connect and be able to collaborate. Agribility has a wealth of knowledge that you'll hear about today that I think will really add to what your center is already doing and how you're serving your consumers. And one of the really exciting things for myself and for Agribility, of course, is our work that we're going to start doing with youth. One of our goals is to get more youth engaged in the opportunities that are out there. We want to encourage young people to get involved with FFA, which is the Future Farm, and the 4-H's. And we want youth with disabilities to learn that they have an option and opportunities to go into the agricultural business, that they have resources that are out there that can assist them with applications or modifications, support. That's one thing that we're hoping to be able to bring more youth into that realm, but also as centers start to work with more young people, you can connect them with us, and that way we can provide them that opportunity, those resources of farmers that are out there that may have disabilities already. So a natural peer support, really what this collaboration is going to provide. One more thing, one of the things we are hoping to know is to learn from centers. We really want to know what the Centers for Independent Living, Statewide Independent Living Councils, maybe other organizations as well, what you guys are already doing with farmers and with agribility, perhaps, in specific. So we've created a survey, and you'll see that added to our website as well. That will be an opportunity for you to really kind of share what you guys are already doing so we can learn, and it will be an opportunity for us to get your contact information if you would like so we can make sure you are connected with what is going on with April and agribility and that collaboration. So that's a little bit of what we're doing. It's always growing, of course, and new ideas that keep coming up, which is always a great opportunity for both organizations. But I guess I will turn it over to you, Paul, so now you can kind of explain a little bit more about agribility.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sierra, and thank you to April and everybody that's joining us today for your interest in our program. Mary asked that we would do a little introduction of ourselves. My name is Paul Jones, and I'm the manager of the National Agribility Project. We are housed at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, within the Department of Agricultural and Biological Engineering, and we're under the umbrella of Purdue's Agricultural Safety and Health Program. I'll talk a little bit more about how agribility is structured and why we're a part of this. I've been here at Purdue with ag safety for almost 19 years now. So I've dealt not only with agribility, but other issues related to agricultural safety. Sierra did a good job in terms of explaining the relationship between April and agribility. Again, it's been informal for many years, back to the days of Linda Gonzalez, and then within the last about 9 months, we've formed a more formal relationship through our National Agribility Project grant. So our purpose is to try to capitalize on the strengths of both of our respective organizational groups. Today I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Agribility's mission. Hopefully I talked to some of you at the April conference in Reno last fall. I was really encouraged by the amount of interest there was in Agribility. For those that have no idea or limited knowledge of Agribility, I'll give you an overview. Then I want to talk about why the relationship or potential relationships between Agribility and Centers for Independent Living is a win-win for both organizations and for the consumers that we both serve. Also, I want to touch on how you can still serve agricultural workers if your state does not have an agribility project. And then also, what resources does agribility have that can be useful to SILs that have an agribility project in their state and don't have an agribility project in their state? So overall, Agribility's mission and purpose is to work with farmers, ranchers, and other agricultural workers that have some type of disability. When we throw out the word disability, it can be a little confusing to some people because a lot of the people we serve don't necessarily have a disability that rises to the level of what the ADA might define as a disability. Obviously, there are some that do. We work with people that have spinal cord injuries, amputations, limited vision or hearing, variety of disabling diseases, multiple sclerosis, cancer. But a lot of people we work with have what we would probably better term a functional limitation, such as arthritis that would not rise to the level of an ADA impairment, back issues, other joint impairments that might limit their ability to complete their farming tasks. So we deal with, hopefully, the whole spectrum that falls within the realm of disability and functional limitation. Not to mention mental behavioral health issues, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other issues. Just as disability is a wide continuum, we try to serve everybody within the wide spectrum of agriculture. Depending on the area of the country that you live in, you may be most familiar with row crops, you know, wheat, corn, soybeans, cotton, or you may have a lot of ranches, other livestock production, sheep, goats. You might have a lot of dairy farms in your state or region, or you might have a lot of produce. For example, Florida, Texas, California, Arizona, produce a lot of vegetable crops. It could be orchards. It might be a niche market like llamas or herbs or aquaculture where they're raising fish or aquaponics where they raise fish and produce together in a symbiotic system. It could even be agritourism like a corn maze or some kind of a hayride business. So, again, wide spectrums of service in both disability and agriculture. In terms of our history, Agribility has been around as a program since 1991. We were first authorized in the Farm Bill of 1990. We function under grants from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Currently, there are 20 state projects around the country, in addition to the one national project that is headquartered here at Purdue. You might ask why there are not 50 or, enough projects to cover all the states and territories. Well, like everything, there is limited funding, and so there is only enough funding currently to go around for 20 projects. And the funding is competitive, so that may be why you don't have a project in your state. Some states choose not to apply for various reasons. But you can find out if your state has an agribility project at our website, which is www.agribility.org. And I'll repeat that several times because there are a lot of resources available on that site. One of the unique things about AgriBility is that every AgriBility project, both the state and the national project, are partnerships. And the grant has to be held by the land-grant university in your state. If you're not sure what the land-grant university in your state is, you can check that. But it's generally the one that deals with agriculture, often with engineering and other kind of practical sciences. SILS, a state, the Centers for Independent Living, can be partners on AgriBility projects, subcontractors, because we have to, the land-grant university has to partner with at least one disability service-related program. That's part of the grant requirement. So it could be Centers for Independent Living, it could be Easter Seals, Goodwill, Arthritis Foundation, a variety of other organizations. They just have to have some kind of connection with disability services. Here at the National Project, one of our main responsibilities is to support the state projects. We do that by providing training, by developing resources, which could be on our website, could be audiovisual, could be videos. And we also do our best to provide limited services to customers in states that do not have AgriBility projects. In terms of training, Sierra mentioned our national training workshop, and that is probably our premier event that we put on every year. It travels around the country. This year it's in Knoxville, Tennessee, March 20th through the 23rd. So we'd invite you to consider attending. It's got 4 days, and it's just packed with a variety of issues related to rural and related to agriculture, deal with rehabilitation. We have a wide range of breakout sessions, plenary sessions, and tours. So we'll take you out to a variety of agricultural enterprises and rehabilitation facilities. So go to that agribility.org website. You can find a link to the AgriBility National Training Workshop on the main menu. And also there is a link on the latest news that talks about how to register and get other information. We talked about some of the things AgriBility does. Some of the things we cannot do, according to the grant limitations, is provide funding or direct equipment to our customers. So we rely very heavily on our vocational rehabilitation systems in the state. And so we're thankful to have Steve Etheridge, a former VR counselor, to talk about the importance of vocational rehabilitation. I think Tom Youngman will touch on that also. Our main service areas, again, education. We network with other organizations like SILS to leverage our resources, provide direct assistance, and then we also make sure that people are aware of our activities and services through marketing. Why is the relationship between AgriBility and Centers for Independent Living a win-win? Not only for both of our organizations, but for all of the consumers that we serve. What are the services we can provide that SILS might not be able to offer, and how can SILS enhance the services that we provide? AgriBility can provide, for example, agricultural expertise. Many of you may be in rural areas, but many of you may not be farmers or have farm backgrounds. There is a unique culture to farming and agriculture. You need to be able to speak the language. You need to be able to know what the terms are. So we can provide that. We can also network with agricultural organizations that you might not have strong relationships with, like the Extension Services or Farm Bureau. They all have a lot of resources that can benefit a lot of people that you might be serving. We can also provide expertise in agricultural assistive technology. I'm sure many of you are well-versed with all kinds of assistive technology, but you might not know about some of the assistive technologies that can be beneficial to people with disabilities in agriculture. You might also know about modifying work practices that can be beneficial to the people we work with. If you're in an AgriBility state, we can provide worksite assessments. If you have a consumer that's a farmer, but you're not sure exactly how to assess their needs, then your AgriBility project can provide those assessments. We can also network with other organizations like vocational rehabilitation we mentioned. Also, veterans groups, and Cindy Chastain is going to be talking more about that. For example, we have strong relationships with the Farmer Veteran Coalition. Again, cooperative extension is in every county of the United States, or covered, every county is covered by cooperative extension if you don't have an office in your county. We also have a lot of resources at the land-grant universities that agribility is required to have as part of the grant. So we can provide direct funding to your SIL if you are a subcontractor to provide services as an agribility subcontractor. Again, that has to be a state that has an agribility project, and you have to be tied into that project as a subcontractor. Obviously, we can provide awareness of the things that you're doing and your resources, and we can invite you to participate in some of our activities like conferences and workshops. So what do SILs provide? What do you provide that could benefit the people that agribility works with? Basically, it's the five core services that every SIL provides anyway. So for example, in terms of information and referral or independent living skills training, a lot of the people that we work with that may become injured or acquire a disabling disease may have very limited knowledge of the whole disability sphere, rehabilitation system, social services. They may have never even thought about dealing with them. So you can provide valuable contacts and training in those areas. Peer counseling can be another excellent area where you can help out, because farmers tend to be independent, and that can result in isolation, and that can result in all kinds of issues. So somebody with a disability that's in agriculture can really benefit from peer counseling. Individual and systems advocacy, another core area. A lot of the people we work with may not, feel comfortable in that realm of advocacy. They tend to be, kind of on their own and may not want to be challenging the system, but the SILs have expertise in that advocacy area that can be helpful. Also, transition services. As Sierra said, we have a lot of youth on farms with disabilities. They need to know what their options are when they get out of school. Or, for example, an older farmer that becomes injured may be put in a nursing home and need to know what his or her options are in transitioning back home. So a couple of things that Sierra touched on, just to reiterate in terms of what we would like to do with April in the next 3.5 years. We do want to distribute resources to every April member that wants them. So that'll be touched on in that web survey that Sierra mentioned. We'll also probably be sending out a mailing just to let you know what we have available and let you know how to receive those if you would like them. We're going to continue participating at each other's meetings. Sierra is coming to our national workshop in Knoxville in March. I participated in the RESNA meeting last fall. So we're going to continue to do that. The assessment that Sierra mentioned is going to be coming out hopefully soon. We do want to coordinate some meetings between the agribility projects and the April member SILs in those states. So you'll probably be getting some information about how to do that. We want to make sure you know who the agribility partners are and how you can partner with them. Just a few things there. So what if your SIL is not in a state that has an agribility project? One of the things I want to do in the next 3.5 years is to try to develop what we might call a roadmap to services. It might be a web-based kind of module. For example, if you have a consumer that's a farmer, you don't know how to deal with them, it would kind of take you step-by-step through the process, give you tips on who to contact, provide some direct resources. So we're going to be working on that. You can always ask the National Agribility Project for support if you have a farmer, but you don't have an agribility project in your state. You can contact us through the website, agribility.org, or directly through the agribility@agribility.org email address. You can also encourage your state land-grant university to apply for an agribility grant. The funding cycle application process just ended for this year, but next year there should be about 15 slots open. So it's going to be a big year. If you're in a state that does not have a project, encourage your land-grant university extension service to apply for one. So quickly, as my time is running out, resources, again, go to the agribility.org website. It is mobile-friendly. You can pull up the pages on your smartphone. Got all kinds of resources, one of which the most visited section of the website is the Toolbox Assistive Technology Database. Almost 1,300 products that could help somebody in agriculture with a disability, all the way from tractors to livestock production, gardening, lawn care, fencing, how to, you know, work with seed and grain. So check that out. It's got a lot of resources. We have a variety of arthritis-related resources. Since back impairments are a big deal, we just did a publication recently on back problems. Also, for those that might be needing some kind of guidance, if you're in a non-agribility state, you want to do an assessment, we do have a worksite assessment tool that takes you through that entire process. Go to the resource link and then go to worksite and vocational issues. You can find that. It's about a 30-page manual. It's got forms you can reproduce and fill out, and it takes you through the entire process. I'm going to stop there for now. And Mary, if you wanted to invite questions for this part of the presentation, I would welcome that now, and then we'll move on to Cindy.
Great. Thanks so much, Paul. So why don't we go ahead and do this? Let's move right along into Cindy. And if folks do have questions, can you please press star 2 on your phone so that it raises your hand? And once we have a full queue, we'll stop for questions after Cindy. So again, if you do have questions at any time, you can press star 2 to raise your hand, and then we can... as soon as we start getting some of those, we can start questions. So, Cindy, why don't you go ahead and take it away? Thanks, Paul.
Okay, thank you for inviting me to participate in your conference call. A little bit about me. I grew up on a family farm in Indiana and then joined the Army and have a Purdue Ag degree. But never used it because then I spent the next 30-some years in the service. So I retired in 2010 and moved back to the family farm and started here working for Agribility in just a little over 2 years ago. So my purpose here is I'm the Veteran Outreach Coordinator for the National Agribility Program, and kind of my job is to make sure that the veterans out there that are either interested in or are farming know about Agribility, know what services we can provide, and that we can help them be able to achieve whatever they want to achieve in the world of agriculture. Some of the things that we do is I also not only talk to veterans, but those that serve veterans, veteran organizations, or people like that you guys out there, independent living centers, that work with veterans, and try to help them understand maybe how to deal with veterans and what some of their issues are. I work a lot with finding resources for veterans, finding referrals, and just giving advice on their farming projects. I work very closely with the Farmer Veteran Coalition. That's a national organization with thousands of members, most of them veterans that are either farming or want to farm all around the country. And I work with a lot of beginning farmers program because a lot of the veterans, especially veterans of the global war on terror, are new to farming or fairly new to farming. So a lot of beginning veteran programs are funded with veterans in mind. So we do work with a lot of beginning farmer programs. So why is it important? Why is agriculture and a thing that we want to talk about to veterans? And there's several reasons. About 45%, some 45 to 48% of veterans actually come from rural communities around the country. And when they get out of the service, they return to that rural community. And They may have grown up on a farm, but if they lived in a rural community, they're familiar with farming. And some of them either had ideas before that they wanted to farm, but definitely when they get out of the service, they want to farm because they're having trouble assimilating back into society. Of course, you've heard the statistics about unemployment, hopelessness, divorce, suicide. Those are higher among combat veterans than the normal population. There's an estimated 20% of veterans that have served in combat that have traumatic brain injuries. And you can also say that veterans have the training and skills suited to farming. Veterans are used to the idea of an operation that, there's no time boundaries. You don't work necessarily from 9 to 5 on a farm, and you don't in the service also. So it's kind of mission-oriented. You work until the job is done. So veterans and some of their skills are very suited to farming. And we found that, and I'm not sure that it's all anecdotal, there are some studies going around about the therapeutic benefits of farming for those that are suffering from post-traumatic stress or traumatic brain injuries. The average age of the American farmer is around 60 years old, and many don't have anybody to replace them. So this is a good time for some veterans that need employment, want to farm, to be able to replace those farmers. So I put on your website, or I had Mary put on your website, a presentation that I give occasionally to those that don't normally work with veterans. It's kind of understanding military culture so that people that don't normally work with veterans have an idea how to deal with those veterans. And I think it's important that you understand those cultural barriers so you can develop a rapport and the common languages needed to talk to those veterans. Especially the do's and don'ts, I think, are important. There are some things that you don't want to do with veterans. So first of all, what is a veteran? A veteran is, for our purposes, is anybody that's ever served in the United States Armed Forces. And that could be for a year or 30 years. It doesn't matter. Anybody that's ever served is a veteran. And the VA system may require some different categories for services, but for our purposes, a veteran is a veteran. And it doesn't have to, a lot of your veterans out there might be a little bit shameful of the fact that maybe they didn't serve in a combat position. But there was a lot of time in this nation's history where we weren't at war, and veterans that served in those capacities during that time may not have had the opportunity to deploy and to serve overseas in combat situations. It doesn't make any difference for any of the services that we provide or should provide. I think it's important to know that a veteran has served, and their the duty, honor, country that is instilled in them is really, it means a lot. And no matter how short the service of that person, that period of their life remains an important part of their lives. Only 1 in 4 Americans now, so less than 25% of Americans have an actual connection to someone in the military. So some of the reasons, of course, we know of recently is that post 9/11 enlistments went way up because of the sense of responsibility or service that people felt. But our military is still an all voluntary force and has been for the past 38 years. Again, rural young kids from rural communities join the service sometimes for just to escape from their normal lives. But when they get out, a lot of times they want to return to those rural lives. A lot of service members get used to the idea of the structure of their military life. They have a chain of command. The organization is very hierarchical. There's a right and a wrong. There's regulations and standard operating procedures for everything we do. So sometimes when that structure is taken away from them, they're a little bit lost. They're a little bit, they have trouble going into a civilian world where the lines aren't as clear. Some of the differences between what we are experiencing now and what happened in past situations like the Vietnam War and the Korean War were very unpopular. So those that returned from those situations were treated pretty poorly. They have a higher incidence of alcoholism, homelessness, undiagnosed PTSD. And nowadays, you're going to find that the survival rates were much higher since Desert Storm and the latest OIF and OEF. The survival rates are higher, but they might have more severe injuries that they survived. But they were treated like heroes when they returned home normally. But they will have mental health issues, but maybe those mental health issues don't carry the stigma of previous Korean and Vietnam War soldiers still experience some of that stigma. So some of the positives of military service for those veterans you're going to encounter are their leadership skills, especially under duress. They're normally, for their age, going to be pretty mature and focused, confident, and they're all in for some kind of camaraderie with their community. So farming is also a way for them to reintegrate themselves into their community, to get that sense of community back. So how do you talk to a veteran if that's not something you normally do? Do you thank them for their service? I think it's okay that you do so. Sometimes a veteran might find that uncomfortable because, how do you respond to that? But listen to them non-judgmentally. When you're asking about their service, ask open-ended questions. Be aware about their feelings, their possible feelings about shame or survivor's guilt or their problems dealing with their stress that they have. And if you offer them help or support, please follow through with that. Because if you don't follow through with something that you've promised them, they won't trust you again and won't come back to you. Make sure that their families are involved in all of the decisions. Make sure their families are also aware of the services that are available to them. Don't act like you know how they're feeling. And don't get into a discussion with them on your political views of the war or any of that. I just would advise you not to do that. Don't rush them into anything. Don't talk to them about or ask for specific accounts of their traumatic events in their military service unless they want to tell you what those are. And don't make decisions for them. Unless a person is suicidal, let them make the decisions on their own. For combat injuries, the mortality rate in the wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq are only 10%. Where in World War II, the mortality rates for injuries was up above 30%. So we've got more survivors with long-term injuries and disabilities. 97% of injuries were caused by explosions, mostly IEDs, improvised explosive devices. 50% of those injuries were to their head and neck, and 20%, we talked about this earlier, of the wounded had some degree of brain injury. So the signature injuries of OEF and OIF are eye injuries, and of course, lower extremities, injuries and amputations. Traumatic brain injuries are very common, and repeated serial traumatic brain injuries. So one after the other makes the injury much more severe. So we also have the more times a person has deployed also increases their risk for injuries. Increased risk for post-traumatic stress disorder, increased risk for depression, alcohol-related problems, and all of these problems are not mutually exclusive. So let's talk just a minute about PTSD. Post-traumatic stress, and some people don't like to use the disorder, just call it post-traumatic stress, is an anxiety disorder. It's characterized by emotional instability after that a stressful event. So that trauma overwhelms what the person usually uses as a psychological defenses. And traumatic brain injury has very similar similar symptoms to PTSD, but they are very different. A person can have a traumatic brain injury and PTSD at the same time, but they have very similar symptoms. They have distressing dreams. They avoid and detach themselves from people and their lives. Loss of initiative. They're hyper-aroused. They can't sleep. They're quick to anger. Concentration, they have a lack of concentration, so they're hyper-vigilant. You know, you might see them sitting in corners in restaurants with their facing the door because they can't have their back to the door. They might have panic attacks, palpitation, sweating, feelings of choking, fear of dying and losing control. Now, those are very similar to the traumatic brain injury symptoms. Same thing, sleeping problems, irritability, depression. So it's not for us to determine which one they have. Hopefully they'll get the medical treatment that they can for these. There are different treatments for each of these symptoms. But a lot of these veterans find that agriculture is soothing to them, working with animals, getting out of bed in the morning to go take care of their chickens, where, you know, they might stay on the couch all day if they didn't have those chickens to get them out of bed. I've had veterans tell me that going to the farmer's market and having to talk to the community members to sell their product helped them get out of their shell a little bit and help them re-energize their commitment to their community. So those are all kind of reasons and why agriculture is both good for the veteran and the veteran is good for agriculture. So I think that concludes what I had to say. So I don't know if you want to open it up for questions now, Mary, or wait till the end.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I do have a couple of folks in the queue, so let's go ahead and turn this into a conversation. All right, so again, when I make your line live, you will hear somebody say your line is now unmuted, and go ahead and start then. All right, caller, go ahead, please.
Okay, my name's Ed Kennedy. I'm in Spokane, Washington. Because we don't know who else is on the call, are we going to get advised as to who else from our state might be on this call? Hello?
Okay. Sorry, yeah, this is Mary. You know, I don't usually do that just because our conversations are non-registered. You don't have to register for them, and folks can just join as they are. However, I think that's a great thing just to throw your name out there, and if others from Washington are on the call, you know, maybe I'm willing to entertain how we can make that happen. Sorry.
Okay.
This is Sierra. I was just going to say, if you want to send me your information, that's one of the roles that I have with April, is to be able to connect you to people that may be in your state that are working on this. So if you want to email me, I can get you connected.
Okay, that's great. I have a follow-up question, if I can do that.
Please go ahead.
Does it matter what their status of a discharge for a veteran was, if it was honorable, dishonorable, or combat-related, non-combat-related disability?
Not for agribility services. Agribility services will, agribility program will not ask anybody for paperwork to prove either their disability or their status of their discharge. Now, if you're asking for VA services, VAVR services, yes, it will matter. It will matter if they have a dishonorable discharge or other than honorable discharge. There will be some services through the VA that they won't be qualified for. But agribility won't ask those questions.
Thank you.
Just an aside, Washington does not currently have an agribility project, but we did hear that Washington State is planning to apply. So it's possible you may have one within the next 9 months.
Excellent.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. Go ahead, caller.
This is Rick Geringer from Wyoming, and I was connected with AgriBility, and in our state just recently was not able to renew their AgriBility project program, and it was due to some staffing. We lost a person at the university that was working with AgriBility, and we haven't found a new person to take his place yet. And I just wanted to add to what Paul had mentioned earlier about working in a state that does not have a program. I work in an independent living center here in Wyoming, and without the AgriBility program, we still, that doesn't stop me from still providing the services, because kind of my viewpoint as an IL specialist, I before pretty much specialized in home modifications, adaptations within the home, but in a farming situation, those adaptations just extend to outside the home. And so as an independent living specialist, I still can meet with a farmer or rancher and go over things outside that are a hindrance to them being able to be independent, and still through still even offer an assessment, outdoor, a farming type assessment as an IL specialist. So it does work. It does work to be a independent living specialist in a state that does not have a program. And besides my knowledge of the independent living background, I have knowledge of a lot of different resources for funding that I may not have known about otherwise. So yeah, I just wanted to add to what Paul said, that yeah, it does work to keep a program going in a state that does not have a AgriBility program, but hopefully Wyoming might be able to get a project going again in the near future.
Thanks, Rick, for making that comment, and appreciate the work you have done out there. You guys have done a great job.
Yeah. AgriBility is just a great resource for, you know, even as an IL specialist, the website is a great resource for independent living specialists for knowing what all is out there. So, yeah, thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Rick, for sharing. So, again, if there are folks on the line that would like to join the conversation by adding comments or questions, please press *2 to raise your hand. And at this point, our queue is empty, and so I'll go ahead and let Steve go ahead and take it away.
Thank you very much. This is Steve Etheridge, and I'm a certified rehabilitation counselor, and I also work for the National AgriBility Project. My responsibility there is to assist with any questions or concerns that are related to vocational rehabilitation. And I guess what I'd like to do today briefly is touch on the importance of vocational rehabilitation to both AgriBility's mission and to April's mission, and then to offer some general overview comments in regard to vocational rehabilitation, their purpose, how they provide services, those sorts of things. And if I don't get too wound up, that'll probably, I probably won't go over my time then. So anyway, as an introduction to the connection of VR to AgriBility in April, April on their mission statement or vision statement is dedicated to advancing the rights and responsibilities of people with disability in rural America. And AgriBility, as Paul mentioned, their purpose or their vision is to enhance the quality of life for farmers, ranchers, and other agricultural workers with disability. Vocational rehabilitation's whole purpose is to assist people with disability in returning to work or going to work for a first time, and to fulfill their potential in that regard. So there, you know, there is the interrelationship between the three organizations, with working with people with disability to improve quality of life, and of course employment is a big aspect of that. So vocational rehabilitation can provide any service that's related to one or both of two things. One is the employment goal, the person with a disability, and the second thing are the functional limitations or the vocational impediments of that person, or the barriers that prevent them from doing the tasks and duties of the job, or would prevent them, you know, perhaps from getting the job. So what I'm going to do, I guess, is elaborate a little more on those things. So from a vocational rehabilitation perspective, employment is always going to be the goal. And the ideal situation is for a person to go to return to work at the same job with the same employer. The other combinations are same job, different employer, different job, same employer, and then different job, different employer. When you consider a farm worker or a farm owner, an ag producer, same job, same employer is essentially what they want to do. They own the farm, and they want to go back and run the business. And that's from the vocational rehabilitation perspective, or at least my perspective as a vocational rehabilitation counselor, that was the ideal circumstance. The starting point with vocational rehabilitation would be a referral, and that would consist of name, address, telephone number, date of birth, diagnosis, disability, and then whoever's making the referral. You could refer on their behalf. They can refer themselves. A person can refer themselves. From my perspective, again, as a VR counselor, all I needed was a name and a way to contact a person so that I could get back with them. After the referral, the next step would be to make application and to have an orientation or an information session in regard to vocational rehabilitation. Eligibility for vocational rehabilitation is based on three things. One is that there's a diagnosis of disability or a disabling condition. The second is that the result of that is what we would call substantial vocational impediments or major barriers that prevent a person from getting and keeping a job or a person from returning to the work they were doing. And the third thing is, are there services that vocational rehabilitation can provide that would address those things. So by vocational impediment, and I'll just briefly explain that, 40 years ago, I cut timber out in Idaho. And so, you know, I was walking on uneven ground, carrying a chainsaw up and down, that sort of thing. Well, currently, I mean, and probably 15 years ago, probably when I was about 50, I developed bulging disc, herniated disc. And so while I can probably cut wood, I can cut a tree, and, you know, I can do those things, you know, for 4 hours with 4 ibuprofen. I can no longer do that full 8 hours day after day after day as I did back when I was much younger. And so if that were my job, I can no longer do that because of the swelling, the inflamed nerves, the pain running down, you know, down the leg and that sort of thing. And you no longer walk on the uneven ground. So those are the vocational impediments. Like no longer lift and carry a chainsaw, no longer, you know, lift and move the treetops or move the limbs away from the tree. So that would be the vocational impediment. Those would be the things that would prevent me, if I were still a logger, it would prevent me from doing that. So that, those are the things that we focus on in regard to eligibility. If a person's eligible for services, the next step is what we call a comprehensive assessment. And that's where some of the evaluation things may come in, you know, a worksite evaluation or on-farm assessment or evaluation. That's where considerations for assisted technology would come in. part of the comprehensive assessment is simply reviewing, you know, medical records and confirming not only limitations, but also confirming abilities and potentials, desires, you know, what the person's most interested in doing and what they want to do. Following that, what's called an individualized plan for employment, or an IPE. And the IPE consists of three parts: one, a job goal; two, services; and then three, rights and responsibilities. The language we used in vocational rehabilitation was consumer. So the consumer has input and is expected. The Rehab Act is very clear that the consumer should have input in the development of the the rehabilitation plan and the services related to that job goal and the outcome. And that's very important that the plan is developed to the consumer's satisfaction and with their input, because that's what services are going to be based on. As I mentioned, vocational rehabilitation can provide any service that's related to one or two or both of two things, and that is the employment goal, and secondly, the functional limitations or the vocational impediments. And I treated the employment plan, the individualized plan for employment, I always treated that as a contract or as an agreement that the consumer and I are agreeing that this is the job goal and these are the necessary services. These are the services required for that person to attain the goal. So an example would be, and this is in the case of a neighbor, probably farm well over 600 acres and both livestock and row crop. And after harvest, it must have been November, a completely full gravity wagon came unhitched and unblocked and rolled over him. So a lot of damage to his right arm and then also damage to a hip. And so he could no longer, you know, lift and carry as he once did. And he could no longer, you know, walk some of the distances between, you know, where he had his cattle, where he had his sheep, and that sort of thing. So what vocational rehabilitation was able to do, and AgriAbility did do the farm assessment, and vocational rehabilitation was able to then, so he could continue farming. They did purchase one of those small, I think it was actually a John Deere, I don't know what they're called, UTVs or something like that, ATV. No, it was more like a Gator. I forget what the John Deere, what the trade name is, but where he could carry buckets of feed in that, you know, to the steers, or he could carry the buckets of feed in the Gator out to the sheep, you know, so he didn't have to walk and carry. And then also in terms of, you know, he's got fence repair and those sorts of things, he didn't have to walk out to do that. And then another thing that AgriAbility recommended and that was done and that vocational rehabilitation paid for, and that was some modified steps to get up into his tractor so that with a handrail, so that the steps were a shorter distance apart and he could, you know, step up into that easier. And a third thing was they offered a design for a corral with swing gates that would allow for him to sort and be able to move his cattle better. And so each of those things was outlined in the individualized plan for employment, and therefore, you know, was able to be funded through vocational rehabilitation, following up on the assessment by AgriAbility. I guess the other thing I should mention in regard to the Rehab Act, the caveat for the services they provide is that it be reasonable and necessary. Necessary, actually, it's the other way around. It's necessary and reasonable. Necessary means that without this, it can't, you know, the person can't go to work. It, you know, necessary is pretty absolute. And so you develop the rationale for that. You need a good rationale. Why is that necessary? And then reasonable often refers to cost comparison, or can the service be provided, can the same service or, you know, a comparable service that would work, can it be provided in another way, either at less cost or that does not involve direct cost? So over the years, I developing rationale and you know, addressing the things I mentioned, the job goal, vocational impediments, there, I cannot think of a situation that we were not able to provide, that vocational rehabilitation was not able to provide the services that were necessary for the consumer to return to the job and that were recommended. So anyway, at that point, I've kind of, that brings me to a stopping point, so I will stop.
Great. Thank you so much, Steve. So folks, again, if you have got some specific questions for Steve and others, now is the time. Press *2 to raise your hand. I'd love to see that queue filling up. And we also, not just questions, but we want to hear from you. How are you guys serving folks in rural areas? You know, my office is located right here in Montana. I grew up on a farm in Montana, and I know that there are people out there serving folks, even though we don't have an AgriBility grant. So we want to hear from all of you. And in case you don't know what to say, have we got a treat? We're going to throw it over to Tom, and he's going to talk a little bit from that Phil's perspective to give you guys some ideas of what to share. So, again, thanks, Steve, and let's move on to Tom. And at any time during this call, you can press *2 to raise your hand so that we know that there are some questions and comments out there. Tom?
Thank you, Sarah. I'm really impressed with the Paul's comments, Cindy's comments, Steve's. They really have hit it the nail head on the nail on the head. Rick from Wyoming, I know well from the AgriBility training, and he is right on with what he was saying, and I hope that he will continue being a non-affiliate member of AgriBility. I want to, of course, tell you something about myself, because they haven't been said. I'm an AgriBility specialist in Vermont. I'm a lifetime AgriBility, a lifetime agriculture person. I joined the Vermont Center for Independent Living as an AgriBility specialist in 2009. I'm a veteran. I have a working farm that I work with my wife. We, at this point, are raising meat goats. So I would just am prepared to take you through what VCIL, Vermont Center for Independent Living, has done in the last two grants with the AgriBility, National AgriBility part, and we partnered with the UVM Extension. We lost that grant in 2014, and at that time, VCIL elected to keep the affiliation with Purdue University, the National Land Grant College, so that we could continue to work with the farmers. So our board of directors, our executive director, felt it was a very important piece of our service to a rural state. We have two cities that are considered cities, and the rest of the state is considered rural. We have two offices in both of those cities. We have two offices there that will go out beyond in the community, beyond, and work with farmers or veterans. We do have four offices in rural areas, and we do a lot of work with rural people, farmers, veterans. So after saying all that, people say, well, how do you do this? And as Rick said, we're funded through the 704 fund that allows us to work with anybody with a disability. And of course, the farmer and the veteran fits right into that. And it's a nice niche. Any independent living center, I believe, can do this. And how we do it is that the program we offer, and just lost my PowerPoint. Sorry about that. So why don't we just go ahead and have Liv it? I got to bring my PowerPoint back. I'm screwing
that's
up
okay,
here.
Tom.
I'm sorry. Just give me one
that's
second.
That's all right. While Tom is pulling that up again, folks, please press star 2 if you want to raise your hand to ask questions. And, you know, Tom, when we were talking yesterday, I just know that you really were able to hit home some of the things that you do working with farmers. And, you know, sometimes there's a different language. We joked about how there's terms that you might not know as farmers. And so if you have any tips on that, that would be great.
Well, I will tell you that it's the same way that Christine was talking about talking with military people. I am a veteran, and I appreciate what she had to say, and it's the same way with farmers. Farmers are, a lot of them will tell you they don't have a disability. They're dragging their leg. They're missing some fingers, but they don't have a disability. So arthritis is there, but that's not a problem. So you really have to be able to go in and talk to the individuals about their farm and talk their language. That's very important. Let's see. I'm going to go back to my PowerPoint, which I do have back. Oh boy, wrong PowerPoint. Sorry. Talk to me some more,
and your PowerPoint up. I do have one caller in the queue. Would you mind if I went to them while you get ready?
Go ahead, please.
Great. All right. So, caller, again, when you hear that your line is unmuted, please talk. Okay, we're ready.
Hi, my name is Daisha Leger, and I'm a social worker from upstate New York in the Finger Lakes region, and I have a coworker who is a Medicaid service coordinator also on the line. And we are actually in the process and the planning stages of having done something like this, and we're very excited to see this seminar, this conference coming up today. And this is exactly what we do. We both work for an independent living center, and we both actually are agriculturalists on the side when we're not at work. And so we're really excited, and just to hear the story of the gentleman who just spoke about his opportunity with the goat farm in Vermont, we're definitely planning on getting more information and applying for this in New York State next year.
That's really exciting.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, if other folks have something that they would like to add, you can press star 2 and get yourself in the queue. Tom, was I able to buy you enough time?
You were, and Paul wanted to make a comment. Why don't we let him make that comment?
All right.
Yes, I wanted to let the caller know that one of the national subcontractors besides April is Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. So the two staff members operate out of Geneseo. I'm not sure how close that is to you, but I'm sure they would be glad to talk to you more about agribility.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, so I want to tell you some of the experiences I've had with the Independent Living Center. We will go to a farm and do an assessment just like any other We're a nonprofit and a non-member, we're affiliate member, not a supported member of the National Agribility Project, but we still do all the same services. We'll do an assessment. We'll make recommendations. We'll help them find the equipment and things that they need to continue to live and work independently. The National Agribility program has the toolbox that Paul's talked about, and it is a fantastic thing to help locate things. You can find a what do you need to do? You need to have a lift for a backup pickup truck to get the wheelchair from the ground into the back of the truck after you transferred. So you go there and you find that piece of equipment, and it will give you resources, where to find that, who to contact, contact information. It'll give you a rough idea how much it might cost. So those things are really important to us. We then have peer support. That when I was originally hired 8 years ago, that was my main job, was the Barn Builder Program, which was hook up people with newly acquired disabilities with people that had had that and lived with that disability and continued to farm. That was a very is a very successful program. We have like 30 different disability people that are willing to work as with other farmers, and we have Merton Pike, who is probably the oldest one that's listed in the Barn Builders program back when he came from Purdue University, 94 years old, still will go to a hospital and talk to a farmer that has lost a leg or an arm. He's a double amputee in 1974, continues to help his son and granddaughter on the farm today. That has been a wonderful program for us. I've enjoyed it. I do a TBI support group with the state of Vermont, supporting traumatic brain injuries and the PTSD. As a member of the Vermont Farmer Veteran Coalition, I encourage these farmers, the veterans that are coming in, to join our organization and to receive services from them. My part of that is the mental health part of it, because we know a lot of them come back with hurting, we would say. People have asked me how we fund this. We are funded, of course, through the 704, but the problem we have with this is that we don't have any money for advertising or go to the national workshops. That our 704 fund does not allow us to do that. So we look for grants and different things to do that. Purdue University has been very gracious to us, and with brochures and any type of supplies we need. Paul and Christine have done a great job of supplying that. I just look like that we're about out of time, and I will turn it back to you, Sierra.
Oh, well, thanks, Tom. And we do have got some time left. I do have one more question in the queue, but then I might not pick on you, but I have a couple of questions for you, Tom, as well. So first, let's go back to our queue, and if you would like to get yourself in line for a question, go ahead and press star 2. All right, speaker, your line is open.
Hi, this is Ed Kennedy again. You mentioned the 704 fund. Now, specifically, what are you speaking of there?
And I'm sorry about explaining that. I'd ask our executive director to be with us today, but unfortunately she had an illness that comes up that she needs to be away and be treated for. She could explain that, but that is a fund that most independent living centers receive from either the state or through the human services or through the government, and I don't do any of that work, so I can't tell you. Maybe somebody else on the call can.
Mrs. Mary, I'd be happy to field that one. So all that Tom is talking about is the fact that as Centers for Independent Living, we receive, Part C funds or Part B funds from ACL. And basically, that states that we are there to be cross-disability serving agencies. And, just because folks live on a farm and are in agriculture doesn't mean that they don't belong in the disability community. And so I think that Tom was just saying that, working with folks in agriculture is not a new service. We can do all the same stuff that we've always done as SILS, all that they are just a different population.
So you're just speaking of our general federal funds that we get.
Exactly. So, okay. Yeah, they don't have extra money. They're just saying, Tom's saying that, when they're doing their reporting at the end of the year, the 704 reports, they just say that, maybe they worked with this farmer on IL skills training because they were teaching him, how to use technology in his field. And so they're just using the same reporting mechanisms we always use. They're just doing it a little differently.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, though. I think that was a good clarification to make. Does anybody else have any questions or comments? Again, press star 2 to raise your hand. And if you are with us on CART, you can just type in your question, and I will voice it for you. And while we're kind of waiting, I just was wondering, Tom, you've worked with a lot of farmers through your independent living center. Do you have any, without using anybody's information, do you have any of kind of your favorite success stories or maybe one of your more creative stories on just how you helped that person continue in the field?
That I can tell you some of our current problems or issues that we're working on. One of the things that the Vermont Agribility team way back begin still shows is a lady with MS that couldn't crawl up into her hayloft any longer. They had a ladder up the side of the barn, and that was my first assessment, my first project with Agribility. Is I knew the lady. I went there and we worked out a ladder system that came down into her manger area where she could pull it. It was counterweighted. It came down. She could walk upstairs with handrails and get into her hay and get the stuff down she wanted. And then when she came back down, she could raise the thing back up. It's got a lot of mileage out of what it was, a very simple little adaptation. I can tell you now that I'm working with a veteran that's 54 years old. He was homeless. He had no connection to the VA. He has diabetes. He had an amputation of the large toe. He came in with no services, no income, and no home to live in. I am currently got him hooked up with the VA. I've got him looking for the SSDI, and it has been a long process, but I feel very good that I'm helping a brother veteran. So, you want me to go on about other things, or you want to stop at that?
I think that's great. I do want to pose one more question while we're waiting. First of all, again, folks can press star 2 to raise their hand and join the conversation. And this is for any of our callers out there in caller land or any of our speakers with us. Does anybody have, I like to call them pearls of wisdom. So if you could give somebody advice, if they're trying to work with somebody out on a farm to continue doing what they love, what would be your most important piece of advice? And again, anybody out there, press star 2 if you've got some, or any of our callers. How about you, Paul? What's one of your, what would you like your pearl of wisdom to be while we're coming to a close?
I think several things are important. One is being aware of the resources that are available. It's not something you need to do alone. And I think one of the most important things is to let the farmer know that they don't have to do it alone. That sometimes hope is the biggest issue. Somebody that's on a farm, for example, becomes injured, as I said, may have absolutely no idea about disability or services. They may be just totally overwhelmed. I think providing them some hope, showing them the toolbox that would give them ideas about how they could possibly continue when they might think that that's not even within the realm of possibility. So encouraging the farmers that there are options for even, you know, people with severe disabilities in agriculture, and being there to support and encourage them.
Great, thanks, Paul. While we're waiting for others to press *2 to join the conversation, let's hear from Cindy. What would you say your pearl of wisdom is that you want to leave with folks?
I think I would, well, there's several. I agree with what Paul said, but also I think it's very important that other family members are involved in the conversation, the initial conversations you have with the farmer, or in my case, the farmer veteran. You're going to find things out from the family members that the veteran or the farmer won't tell you, that you need to know to make their farming experiences better, or, you know, being able to adjust to whatever they need to do to be able to continue farming. And I think it's important that the family members or the caregivers are involved in those discussions.
Great. Thanks, Cindy. And I think, I think you bring up a point of, like I said, I grew up on a farm, really small community, and it is, if somebody needs something, it's the whole community that really comes together to do it. And so really engaging that community in that support process. And it might be something as simple as making sure the nearest feed store has a ramp or is accessible for everybody. Or just looking out for one another. I remember one of our neighbors got trampled by his cattle once, and my dad went out there and he had to cut down all the fences and everything so that the ambulance could get through. And so, you have to bring the whole community together, so that's great. All right, I don't see anybody in our queue yet, so why don't we move along to Steve? What would you say is your pearl of wisdom?
I agree with everything that's been said, and to maybe touch on what Paul said, one of the things that I learned in vocational rehabilitation was the unknown, the uncertainty of a new situation or a recent injury or whatever, that weighs pretty heavily on people's minds. And maybe for me to recognize that and to let them know that we can, we can kind of break the unknown down a little bit. And then, as Paul said, to provide hope in that way. The other thing that I learned that I think was very important is for the person to understand that I think that they, and I do think and I believe, that they are the expert in regard to their disability and them, that it's not up to me at all to tell them or to make decisions for them, but they are the expert and they're going to teach me about their situation or their circumstance and what they want to do going forward. And I guess then in addition to that, many times I think particularly as it relates to the farmers with disability and vocational rehabilitation, the culture of agriculture is different than, maybe any other kind of employment. Because as Cindy mentioned, the family is going to be involved. that's also weather dependent, time dependent, as Tom mentioned, or Cindy mentioned, I forget which one, that you work till the mission is done or till the task is accomplished. You don't, you aren't punching a time clock. And basically, I've met a lot of folks that work construction because they really like construction, or they worked in manufacturing because that's how they paid their bills and were able to afford, other things they wanted. But I don't think I ever met a farmer who didn't love farming, didn't do farming because for any other reason than they loved it. And that's quite different than other occupations in some ways or in many ways. And VR counselors aren't necessarily going to be attuned to that. And so I would always encourage that the farmer or if they're working with AgriAbility or working with another agency, to encourage the VR counselor to be able to come out and actually take a look at what they're, what needs to be done, what would make things better, easier, to allow for, for a deeper understanding, I could think of the circumstance. So that's a rather long response to your question, but I'll stop.
I think it was great. Thank you, Steve. And I just want to summarize it because you hit on a lot of great pearls. And I think you're absolutely right. And as in VR, I think it's great that you understand that the consumer or that person with a disability is the best expert. And for those folks out there working in centers, I think one of the biggest things that we can do to support that person with a disability is to help them understand what it is that they might need or want, because you don't know what you don't know. And then they can really go out there and inform their VR specialist or VR counselor. For example, I talk a lot about my dad, but I worked at a center for a long time, and I sent him some ski poles. It was really easy, ski poles, hike poles that I borrowed from our state AT program, and he used them when he was walking long distances in between the grain bins and, in the truck and checking out the different areas, and it saved so much on him. And so then, that was something he didn't even think about, and he didn't even know to think about. And so just helping people explore those different options. And we've got just a tiny bit of time left, and I'll let you wrap it out, Tom. So first, I just want to mention again, please go to our website and evaluate this call. We had great speakers on the line, and I'll let Tom finish us out.
Okay, Sarah, thank you. And I would like to add to, I think, Cindy's comment about, she touched on the family. One of the main things that I find in doing assessments and stuff, that the caregiver sometimes needs more care than the actual client, because they're really taking the brunt of the farmer not being able to do what he wants. It aggravates them. They're depressed. And that, so I think that we need to address the caregiver as well. And also, we talked about goals. Independent Living Center, the individual needs a goal, and what that goal is their own, what they want. It is, we're not going to tell them what they want. We'll suggest and whatnot, but they make up their own mind, and we would go forward and help them achieve that goal. So that's where I would end it.
Thank you so much. So great. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on our first IELTS conversation. Tune in next month when we'll be talking about veterans serving those who served us. And I think with that, I want to say thank you again to our great panel of speakers, and have a great rest of your week.